All right, we're back here in our studios and ready to continue the discussion on rural Minnesota communities. Let's get right to it and head to Worthington.
Yes, good evening. My name is Mike Kunertz. I farm north of Worthington here, 10 miles. And I guess, first of all, I'd like to thank for the opportunity to speak here tonight. My first comment is I think we as a rural community and the other surrounding areas have to keep a focus on the problems at hand. I think we're getting just a little bit too broad without segregating anybody, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Wilmer, Mankato. This is a very critical situation we're in right now. Very critical. I talk to a lot of farmers on a daily basis that tell me it's not even fun to wake up and put their boots on in the morning. This is, it's worse than it was back in the 80s. And you read in the newspaper, the stock market is booming, interest rates are low, everybody's making money. What about farmers? John Deere is laying off production workers, Caterpillar is scaling back. Why do you guys think that is? They're not booming. Farmers aren't buying. Nobody's got no money. This thing is going to go right down the line. And it's going to affect everybody. And I guess I feel the underlying factor of this whole problem is overproduction. That's what everybody's talking about. And I guess, Senator Grams, you talked about trade taxes and prices, and why are we overproducing? Why do you think? We don't have a price. If you don't have a price for something, the only thing to do is produce more to try to generate the same dollars you had 5 or 10 years ago on that same piece of land. You have a higher fertilization cost, higher chemicals, higher seed. Your cost of insurance, that you keep talking about insurance, but your insurance costs go up every year. Why do we have to increase more? Because we have higher costs. Someday this country is going to wake up and we're going to be short on food supply. And we're going to have you folks to look at. Because we're about 1 or 2 years of disaster away from saying, what the hell did we do here? You have the opportunity to do something now. You've been talking about it for years. Senator Wilson, I compliment you. I've been at Kinder Corn. You've helped us out along the way. I just feel that the underlying solution to this whole problem, we've talked here with the panel, we have to increase loan rates.
It does sound, we've got some trouble with the audio there, but it sounds like there's a real note of impatience there. I think an emotional one that perhaps we are spinning our wheels talking about global trade deals that take years, if not decades, to negotiate. Elaborate federal solutions that also take a long time to put together. Is our vision a little bit too long-sighted here? Are we just not seeing the hand in front of our face?
Well, no, and the story that the farmer has been talking about here, and I've been traveling around as Senator Wellstone has around the state for the last 2 years, and I've heard one group say, we've talked this issue to death. And 2 years ago it was disappointment, now it's despair. And as Paul said, when you're talking to a lot of these farmers, they're getting backed into a corner where they don't have any place to go. They've lost a lot of the equity in their operations. They're facing foreclosures. They can't even pay their tax bills. And I know what he's saying when we're talking about crop insurance. That's long-term for some of these farmers. Short-term means, how am I going to be profitable this fall, or how am I going to put together loans for next spring? And he talks about producing more. Well, that also adds to the problem. And if you put more grain out on the market and it's not being sold, and we've lost about a third of our markets around the world due to this crisis globally, that where is the product going to go? And it's not only good crops in this country and more production, but other countries, the European Union, South America, etc. So again, it's supply and demand. So, like I said, if this was easy, I think we would have had the problem solved by now. And we've gone around and I've asked farmers, what is the one thing you want me to bring back to Congress? And we get different views and different ideas. So this is going to be tough, but short term.
How about the immediacy? There's this idea for the federal government to buy $1 billion in soybeans. Is that a good immediate answer right now?
It becomes a one solution. There is not going to be one thing that's going to solve this. It's going to take several types of things working together. The problem didn't happen because of just one reason. There a couple things all happened at one. It's going to take several things, I think, for it to unwind.
Term?
For the short term, and that's why I think the Congress is looking at some short-term payments. Because even if you were, one of the real dilemmas that while raising the price sounds good, and I'd love to have prices higher too because I am a farmer. But one of the dilemmas is that you raise the price to a point that becomes a problem, then suddenly you do have overproduction that comes from a lot of other different places. So you have to be looking at the same time you're talking about higher prices, be talking at ways to increase your markets, because if you don't, you don't have a way to get rid of that profit, that what you produce. So it becomes multi-solution for what has to occur there.
Well, you asked about soybeans.
Fine, but it doesn't deal with this major structural problem. I think Mike was saying, and I'm sorry, I think it was Mike, you're right on the mark. I mean, it is a price crisis, and in all due respect, I don't know how anybody can say we need to stay the course, and I don't know how anybody can tell farmers, well, we need to keep the loan rate at a dollar, whatever, for corn, a dollar, what is it?
$1.78.
You'd say that to any farmer anywhere in our state of Minnesota, and you've got no credibility. It's not true we don't know what to do. We do know what to do. It's the price crisis, and you're going to have to take the cap off the loan rate, and people are going to have to admit that the freedom to farm has been freedom to fail, and people don't have to say, I voted the wrong way. I don't care. Because there can be honest disagreement, but there's going to have to be a correction, there's going to have to be a modification, there's going to have to be a change, and it's going to have to be done now. We do know what to do. It's a question of whether or not the farmers and rural America will put enough pressure on people in the Congress and governors to speak out on this with knowledge and to talk about what needs to be done.
Well, give us a sense of magnitude about what you're talking about. You said there's a $7.4 billion emergency bill,
yeah.
which will
probably be more than once it includes disaster relief. Which
right. How does that $7 billion package compare to what you have in mind? How big would the first aid cost?
I promise I'll be quick, and then others can go into this. But you know what? It's hard not to talk about this because you meet people every day and you see the pain and you know what's happening. It's apples and oranges.
Okay.
This is something that Senator Graham and I will agree on. That is emergency assistance. That's just to enable people to live to farm another day. And in fact, most farmers say, look, we appreciate it. I would question how we're doing it, but what we really need to do is know whether we have a future, and that's about price.
But this farmer's talking about staying alive right now, financially speaking.
Yeah.
Will the form of financial aid that $7 billion package entails, will that keep the family farm alive?
Not all of them. No, but it'll help some.
It'll help some, as the senator said. It's not going to maybe cure. It's not going to cure the problem. We know that.
It's going to keep them going.
But
it's
going to
keep
before.
A lot of them going.
You've done a $6 billion aid package last year.
$7.4 this year, and it could go higher if we get the disaster in there. I had supported an $8.8 billion bill. But the senator calls it freedom to fail, and Secretary Glickman, the USDA, was just before Congress before we left, and he said this is not the blame for freedom to farm. These are a lot of other things that have contributed to the crisis we're facing in rural America, and all of a sudden, for those who oppose freedom to farm because they want more Washington control to try jerk the rug out of it, I think is not the right way to go. Do we need to open it up, look at loan rates? I've said we should do this. Is freedom to farm perfect? No, it's not. But a return to the past is not going to help our farmers either.
Okay, let's head out to the state fair. We want to hear from some more people. Question at the state fair.
Hello. My name is Joanne Pels. I'm from Walker, Minnesota. And I'm a business agent for a state employees union. And I'm also a county commissioner. We've been sitting here listening to you for over an hour. And you've talked about amending the Freedom to Farm Act. We're in favor of that. You've talked about removing the loan cap, technology, business opportunities in rural Minnesota, environmental concerns. Now I think it's time to move off the dime and do something. When can the farmers expect something to happen? You've got short-term payments coming that can tide them over until you get rid of the loan caps and they can get more money. And why do we need to put more pressure on? I've watched farmers that have had farms for six generations, standing on our local news, and they're crying because they have to give up their farm. They've lost it because the loans can't be extended anymore. We have had auctions. My husband was at an auction about a month ago near Park Rapids for $10,000. we could have had a farm, because all the implements, everything you needed to farm, we could have gotten all of it for $10,000. It's unheard of. The time to act is now. And I'm just following up on Worthington, what he was saying, the despair, following up on what I was just hearing, that we've had enough rhetoric. Now it's time to tell the farmers, when I go back, I'm going to do this. And I'm sorry, Senator Grams, I don't think it's fair for you to put the farmers in that great big tax cut that President Clinton has been saying all along he's going to veto. And so now you can blame President Clinton for not helping the farmers out in Minnesota, because you put it in a great big tax bill that's not going to be passed. We know that. So we need to tell the farmers today, this is what we're going to do. And I'm sorry, Senator Wellstone, we don't need to put more pressure on. The pressure's here. It's now and it's real.
But the pressure is on you. But I look, I have a lot of respect for what you said, and it's out of respect that I have to say this to you. I'm not saying that farmers, or for that matter, our rural communities need any more pressure. I'm just telling you that it is a reality that, first of all, the country as a whole doesn't understand this economic convulsion. They don't know what's happening. And second of all, there are all too many representatives and senators who, in your words, will not get off the dime until rural citizens put more pressure on them. I'm sorry, it's going to take an all-out effort from all of us to make this change.
When we go back to Washington and I tell them the stories we've heard out in outstate Minnesota, it takes a lot to get them to listen, because we hear it every day. And I've had them say that, you know, we've talked this issue to death, especially over the last 18 months as this crisis has even deepened. And it's hard, as Paul said, to get a lot of them to listen and say, yes, we're going to pass this and we're going to do it. I've had crop insurance in for two Congresses, and we can't get the Agricultural Committee to pass something as simple as crop insurance reform when we've got it into the budget to pay for it and everything else. So it is a problem.
But how about that woman's idea of taking the farm aid out of the tax cut that is veto-based?
I've supported separate bills to do it as well. But this is the package that's going to get to the president, because I can't get an estate reduction plan through the Senate on its own, because every senator won't vote for it.
We need
that, and I'm not trying to lump it in there just to put the president in a bad spot, but it was the only vehicle there. And if we could get support to pass it on its own, I would, you know, endorse that 100%.
I want to be accountable to what you said, though. I'm just being honest. I think we need a lot more pressure yet. But if you're saying to me, Senator Wellstone, I want you to be accountable, I can say KTCA and Star Tribune and Minnesota Public Radio and those that have sponsored this, and to Minnesotans, if you're asking me to fight like hell, when I go back, I will fight like hell.
I know you will. Can I follow up one? Quick, tell us who we can contact besides you two.
Who can you contact besides the senators? That's the question.
Well, you can contact just about everybody, and all the senators need to hear across the board. So if you're going to email something out, make sure it's not just our mailboxes, but all of them. If you're going to write letters or make phone calls, you can encourage them to do that. The Congress does respond. And when we say we're going to fight, we all want to fight. But are we going to fight for the same thing? And I mean, Paul and I disagree. We agree on the crisis, but we disagree on what caused it and how to solve it. But we need to come together. And I know people out there are tired of the politics and the finger shaking.
Let's hear from Lori in the studio.
Okay, another county commissioner, Mary Beth Rogers from Rice County.
Correct. My question is this. Rice County is 35 miles south of Minneapolis, and we in the northern part of Rice County have a very difficult issue, and that is the urban and the rural growth. Our rural growth is non-existent right now because the urban population is moving down to our area. We're trying to have a happy medium between our family farms and the people from the cities who come down to our area. We also have a problem with bringing industry into the urban area, down into the rural area. What can we do as county commissioners to promote industry to come down into our area? We have a lot of family farms who cannot support themselves by just, as we know, being on the farm. Coming from a farming community myself, I worked on a family farm for many years. My uncle also worked in St. Paul. He drove 80 miles one way every day to go to work. And that was the only way back then, and that's, I don't want to tell you how old I am, but that's probably about 30-some years ago. And it's another trend that we have to take in consideration when we're doing comprehensive planning for our area. Where can we put industry? Where can we put our roads? How can we update our roads to bring that industry into our community so that these families can support themselves, can receive the products that they need at a reasonable cost?
Sounds like a planning question.
Sounds like a planning question. I can handle that one. Unfortunately, maybe you're living in the wrong direction, but we will get to you. As you know, all your land use decisions are made by your units of government and lower. I mean, as state planning director, I can't do anything to tell you what to do in Rice County. You don't have that authority. The Met Council can't either because you're outside of the seven-county area. But what we are attempting to do as an administration, and we're starting with the St. Cloud Growth Corridor, we'll get down to yours next if this works. Or come to my office tomorrow and talk about your need to try to get all the units of government, DOT, DNR, Met Council, Minnesota Planning, county, local, to get together and start talking to each other and say, how can we develop this area? What makes sense for your area? So you know what the Department of Transportation is going to do. So the Department of Transportation knows what you're going to do so they can start planning the infrastructure needs that you have. So we're trying to bring out regions of the state in regions that make sense. So we call this the I-94 growth corridor right up to St. Cloud. We've got another one going right through your county down to Rochester. We've got another one going up 35 towards Duluth to try to start working together to plan our communities by collaboration, not confrontation, to have all the resources there at one table. And we've just started out last month with the I-94. And if you call me at the office, I'll start talking about getting your region organized to start doing the same thing.
From a citizen?
I have one other follow-up question for Senator Grams and Senator Wellstone. You, as senators, have the opportunity to put forth legislation to encourage companies to relocate into urban areas. And what can you do to help those companies relocate down into our areas?
Chrissy?
Well, I don't know. When it comes to tax laws or zones or zoning or regulations, we can't do that from Washington. We can't force companies to go down there. You know, you have to make it attractive for them to want to locate. Good working, you know, good labor force is one good thing. The tax base, the regulations, and as Dean is saying, you know, those are the things that need to be worked together. You can't, and I don't think through our, from Washington, that we can socially engineer that either through regulations or tax codes. But
there are some things. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry, right in there. Go ahead and finish.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm Rice County, 494 square miles, 27 lakes?
Not that many, Senator.
Yeah. Well, we lived in Rice County. I always thought we had a lot of lakes.
That's a final.
Check it out. I think that there's a couple things. One thing that Dean was talking about makes a lot of sense. Again, I think we're going to see more telecommuting. I think there's an obvious connection between Rice County and these information technology companies, people staying at home and working for these companies, satellite offices. Second of all, I would put the emphasis anywhere in our state on local entrepreneurship. I think access to venture capital, 504-7A guaranteed SBA loan programs, making sure that the people who make the decisions live in the communities, I think that's where most of our growth is going to be, and that's where I would put the emphasis. And I think there are things we can do at the federal government to make sure there's more access to the venture capitals and to the kind of low-interest loans to enable people to get started.
Okay. I'll make one quick last comment. Contact Jerry Carlson at DTED, too, about the program I talked about in the first hour, about them trying to relocate growing businesses into the more rural setting. So you call up the Department of Trade and Economic Development and ask about that program. Maybe you can plug into DTED's program also.
Let's head to another site that we want to
hit. I'm sorry, quick question, though. Doesn't all of this contradict what we were just talking about as one of the big hazards of the depopulation of rural Minnesota, that we're going to turn the now 10 or 15 county metro area into this megalopolis? If the kind of thing you're talking about encouraging in places like Rice County, creating sort of a bedroom community or a mixed industry down there, wouldn't that create more of this draw from other parts of the state?
I would say this is a truism. Growth is going to occur whether you plan for it or not. But people are coming. And the question is, what are you going to do to have your community be developed in a smart way that you want to live in than just in a haphazard way of throwing confetti up? Rice County's got a good opportunity while they still have a mix. is to have some influence of what they're going to look 20 years from now. If you just put your head in the sand and say, no, we don't like planning, state of Minnesota, you're evil, go away, yeah, we don't need you, it's going to occur anyway. Market forces will take over, and you're going to get what the growth pattern is going right up 94 from Becker, Minnesota, Big Lake, Monticello, right up there. It's going to happen that way, or maybe we can all get together and make it a little better place to live 20 years from now.
The other thing is the people that are moving there are people that are commuting back to the Twin Cities to work. I think what they'd like to see happen is some job opportunities for the people that live in that community to be able to stay in that community so they don't have to commute the Twin Cities. So this becomes an issue, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, where the governor's talking about self-sustainability or the being able to work towards that goal of being able to have the communities to be in a position that, granted, we're going to have to do some short-time things to help us get through the crisis that we are right now. At the same time, we've got to be planning so that the next time something like this occurs, we're in better shape than we are this time.
Okay, let's
land
end the question.
What's going to happen to the farmland? That's the other issue, too.
Let's get some more citizens in here and head to Crookston. Crookston, your question, please.
Hi, I'm Zach Borey with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. I'm a cropping systems specialist for Northwest Minnesota. And I'm going to make an assumption that you gentlemen are all going to go back and do your very best and do some excellent work for us. However, I'm going to ask you another question you probably don't get very often. Government is only part of the solution. And given that it's only part of the solution, you get asked quite often, what's government going to do for me? I want to ask you, while you're away doing what you need to do to help out, what is it that you think that we should be doing here in rural Minnesota? What can we do? And I'd like to hear from both the federal and the state people in there.
Sure. What can rural citizens do for their community?
You know, one of the best examples I saw coming out of this last year or so was a group of farmers from up in northwestern Minnesota that came with a concept called Minnesota Marketplace. That is, what could we be doing as local farmers to do some things to link up farmers growing some specialty crops for specialty buyers? And it becomes the idea that getting away from the traditional crops that we've got so much surplus now, are there ways that we could do moving in that direction? Because of their perseverance, because of their ideas, here was something that we managed to get some money through the legislature that we're working at putting together. So it's those kinds of things of taking some local ideas and working with people at either the state or federal level that becomes a real important thing. I think he makes an excellent point that it's usually a lot of the creativity that exists comes from the local community, and that's something that we need to capitalize on.
I was up in Duluth for the rural summit that the governor spoke at, and he made a very pointed message. I think some people misinterpreted it, but he looked out in the audience where all the county commissioners, the local unit of the government leadership was out there. He says, I need you to go back and do your job and tell me what you need. Don't assume that we're sitting in St. Paul have all the answers for your communities out there. Go out there, meet with your people out there, come back to us. What is it that you need to be a healthy, vital community? Because the best solutions usually come from the closest source, which is your local leadership. So the county commissioners out there, Rice County, other counties, come to us. Give us some of your ideas. Don't assume that we have all the great ideas in the world in state government, and our doors are open for you to come and give us some good ideas.
Okay, let's hear the ideas out in Worthington. We want to hear from the citizens.
You want to know what other things people can do? Or
in Worthington. We want to hear from the citizens in Worthington very quickly.
You can talk next.
Well, let's see, and Senator, I promise. Worthington, go ahead.
Well, good evening. My name is Kurt Peets, and I'm a retired farmer residing here in Worthington. I would like to come back to the revenue insurance issue for a bit. One of the challenges that rural families have is maintaining their standard of living these days. Records indicate that the cost of living for rural people as well as urban people is somewhere in the $35,000 to $40,000 range. One of the ideas in terms of providing insurance has been to establish a food tax at the wholesale level, with that tax dedicated to buy down the premium for revenue insurance. The question is, what may be the possibilities of our Congress implementing such a plan?
Okay, just be direct and honest. I don't think there's a chance of that happening. I don't think people are going to support a food tax. I don't think that's going to happen. And on the rural citizens making a difference, I think all of the language and all of the policy that's focused on homegrown economies, more self-reliant, self-sufficient people with the entrepreneurship is right on the mark, and we've got people that are ready for that. but we can't avoid the battle right now over whether or not we're going to have family farmers in our state and in our country. And I think there are a couple of other things, too. Hold all of us accountable for how we vote. Put the pressure on. Meet with reps and senators. Have us keep coming back out to the communities. And if necessary, we may need to have a lot of people come into Washington to shake things
up. Food tax, Senator Graham?
I don't think it'll fly either. But in Washington, you know, we're talking about the crop insurance reform, and I got into our budget this year another $6 billion on top of what we already have for crop insurance to put through the reform. And that's what we need to help buy down these premiums for farmers and also get rid of this average yield per year or bring down that APH so farmers can at least insure a level of crops that can pay in case they don't have the crop to have. So there's a lot of things we can do, but to talk about you know, having a food tax, I don't think it would fly either.
Quickly, how much chance is there that this farm aid and any farm-related issues will be separated out from this brewing battle over the tax cuts?
Over the tax cuts? I think we'll put them on the floor as individual packages if the president vetoes this, but I don't know how far we're going to get with it.
So farmers wait until this battle's over?
Well, that's only on the tax issue, but the emergency supplemental will go through and we get back in September. That we're going to get passed right away.
September for that.
I hope we get it done in the president's signature so it's ready by the October 1st.
Okay.
No, I'll go. Okay. Should we go to another citizen question quickly from the audience here?
Okay.
Very quickly.
This is Joe Malachek from Redwood Falls is interested in the future of agriculture for his children.
Yeah, I guess I haven't got much time, so I won't cover the issues. Young farmers, I don't see why the federal government can't put together a program that will help young farmers get started in agriculture.
Okay. What can you do for the young farmers?
I think it's very important.
Young farmers, how do you keep them on the farm?
Well, Joe is absolutely right, especially for beginning farmers. But you know, more than anything, Joe, and you know this, ultimately young people are going to say, can I afford to do it? Is there going to be a decent price? Can I cash flow? So without a decent price, there isn't any future. It starts with that, and then there's other things that we can do for beginning farmers.
You got to get rid of capital gains and get rid of the estate tax because you have to make more money and cash flow even higher if you're going to pay that high premium. And if a parent dies or wants to transfer the farm, they can't do it to the young people. So there's, you know, on the tax side, that's one of the most regressive things that is keeping young people off the farm today.
Dean Merkley, keeping young people?
I agree with Senator Graham's on the inheritance tax. I think we have to take a look at it. I think it's going to bankrupt most of your farmers, just changing it from father to son when he dies, and I think it's something we ought to take a look at.
One of the real problems that comes for anybody trying to get into a new farming operation or even expansion is the debt that comes along with it. And when, in fact, you have low margins, as we're experiencing right now, the more debt you have, the worse that makes it. So anything that's going to involve some debt with low prices becomes a problem.
We are out of time. Thank you so much, panel and citizens everywhere. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Thanks again for joining us. And a special thanks to all the county extension agents who helped put this program together. Thank you to Martin and Lori and everybody else, our wonderful crew. We'll see you tomorrow night.
It's 26 minutes past 8 o'clock. You've been listening to a special Citizens Forum brought to you by Minnesota Public Radio, KTCA Television, and the Star Tribune newspaper of Minneapolis. NPR's broadcast of the Minnesota Citizens Forum is supported in part by the Minnesota Farmers Union, a voice of Minnesota's rural communities and the people who live there, and by the members of Minnesota Public Radio.